Hey guys, welcome to Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. I'm Simran and I'm joined today by...
Hi guys, it's me, Halima.
And that's it. No Carlos today, guys.
That's literally it, yeah. It's a girly episode today, no Carlos. Apparently, in over 4 years, this is our first ever episode without Carlos.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that. I thought I could have sworn that you and I had done an episode together before, but
I think we were supposed to, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah. For some reason in my head, like I was so sure that we did, but... this is the first.
But yeah, so this is our first episode without Carlos, guys. Maybe we'll just carry on the show without him.
What's this light on your face? How are you doing that? Because my lighting is so bad.
Oh my God, I'm going to be Carlos. I actually do have a ring light somewhere. I think it's crushed. I'm not going to lie. I'd be so surprised if it still works. But this will actually segue me nicely onto what I wanted to talk to you about. You're a TikTok star now?
Sigh. Not really. I'm trying.
You got one that got... loads of views.
Yeah, I got one that's on like 1.5 million views.
Million?
Yeah, it's like 200k likes.
Bro, I thought it was like 100,000.
No, it's like 200k likes and like 1.5 million views.
Oh my God,
it's crazy. Like, it's, you know what, the algorithm is so random, because
so random.
I wouldn't look at that and think like it's more like cool than like my other posts. So basically, guys, the context here is that obviously I like to travel quite a lot, and I've been saying for the longest time, literally for years, like years and years and years, like that I want to start like travel vlogging and stuff like that. And I've just obviously peak ADHD, like just never gotten around to it. But then like 1.5 years ago I did make a TikTok page, and what I do is like I post like 3 videos 3 days in a row, and then I won't do anything for 6 months, and then 6 months later I'll come and post like another 3 videos, and then I'll disappear for 6 months. And then like the other day I was like, okay, do you know what, one of my New Year's resolutions was like to actually commit to like my travel TikTok and like make videos and stuff like that. So then I was like, I posted like 2-3 videos, and then after the third one is usually when I disappear, but then like the third one like got blew up. And since then, you know what it is, it's like it's easy to give up when you don't see results straight away, especially for like some people with ADHD where our dopamine receptors are just like completely fried, and we don't understand like long-term investment. We just want like the results straight away, and I've been like victim to that. But this time around, like I think because one of them did like quite well, I've been like keeping up the momentum. So yeah, it's quite fun.
It's definitely dopamine when your shit gets liked.
100%. Oh, I love it. But it's so annoying because it's like I have one that got like super liked, and then the rest of them I post it and I sit there with my phone in my hand like, yeah, I'm gonna get like 50 million likes. Yeah. Doesn't happen.
Then the expectation then skyrockets that every single one's gonna bang like that.
Yeah, and I'm the ones that don't, I'm like, why the hell is this not banging? This is a sick TikTok. This is a great video. Why is this not banging?
How many followers are you on?
Not loads, like 1.5 maybe or something like that. 1.5k.
That's still a lot. Did most of them come from that video?
Yeah, that video was still getting likes.
See, that's a lot of followers. Like, I know obviously it got a lot of views, but for people to then go on your profile and decide to follow you off that.
Yeah, and people like are really sweet and nice, and like they've been commenting, and like people are quite nice. So I'm quite enjoying it, making my silly little videos. It's quite fun.
Aww. I also feel like, not that the traveling itself wasn't worth it, but at least it's kind of adds like an additional factor of like, A, you're archiving it for yourself, your own memory, but also like if you can like show other people, get likes, A, get the dopamine and likes, and then maybe one day hit the creator fund,
make some money, that would be fantastic. I know. And to be fair, like one thing Mango Masala did show is that like, you have to be consistent to like to build a page and build a platform and a following, you know. So much of it is consistency,
but the TikTok algorithm is incredibly random.
Now, I was gonna say I got quite lucky in that I had a bit of like a boost like with one of my videos. It's luck. So much of it is just luck, because I actually see so many creators I come across like with like small followings, and I'm like, oh my God, wow, I love your videos, like they're great. And then I come across people who have like millions of followers, and like their TikTok, their videos and their content is so mid, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
So I do think so much of it is just like luck. Obviously a lot goes into it, like pretty privilege is a massive thing, white privilege is a massive thing, like the algorithm is as random as it can be, obviously favors certain metrics.
Yeah. Yo. Oh yeah, or
audiences,
yeah, for sure.
Audiences favor certain metrics as well.
I feel like it is like also when the new platform comes out, it's literally just a race of who can capitalize on it first. I was like, when Red Note happened, I was like, shall I make a Red Note account and just start making videos on there
before it blows, come like Charli D'Amelio? Oh my God,
I'll do it.
her look was insane because she started making TikToks like what, around the pandemic time or probably a bit earlier or whatever, just when it started popping in pandemic time. And she's like the OG like TikTok influencer. She's flipping loaded,
literally. Even like Addison Rae, like, is like just a household name level celebrity now. She's not an influencer no more.
She makes music, innit?
And she's been in like maybe like films and stuff, and she's friends with like one of the Kardashians.
Interesting. Oh, to be an influencer. I'd love to be an influencer and just...
What a life.
I know they always say, like, oh, it's actually work and it's difficult. And I'm like, I'd rather be doing that than sitting in an office sending emails.
Sorry, this is going to sound disrespectful, but I don't care.
No, I don't either. I don't have sympathy for that. And I'm like, I genuinely would rather have your job.
If you're comparing it to working a 9-to-5, like, whether it's a 9-to-5 that's intense or not intense, being an influencer will still always be easier than that.
And forget about 9-to-5, even that's like cushy. Forget, like, what about blue collar work?
Yeah.
Blue collar work, manual labor, vocational work.
That's what I mean. But they're like being like, don't underestimate how much work we do. We work our asses off. I'm like, I'm not saying that you don't work hard and like you don't make content and that a lot of work goes into that content. I'm not denying you that, but you can't compare that level of work to like manual labor.
It's easier. It is easier. Like, you to try and say, like, making a little TikTok dance or like a try on haul where you're literally getting gifted clothes and trying it on is more difficult than like manual labor or sitting in an office for 8 hours a day. Like, you cannot, sorry.
And then like even the like big time, like larger scale influencers, they don't even edit their own videos anymore. They have their own like production team.
Exactly. They literally just sit in front of the camera.
So good for them, to be honest.
That's what I want to do. I want to be them.
The only thing I will say to be on their side is that from doing this, just the absolute shite you have to deal with on the internet from people.
Yeah. That's one thing I've always said, like, I could never be like famous. Like, I'll be trying to fight people every single day.
And you would.
I would as well. I would give away my address. I would literally be like, come to my house, I'm gonna fight you.
Pull up.
I would do that.
That's what I mean. Like, I know someone like from around here who's like TikTok famous or Instagram famous, and then I go in the comments and people are so dense and unnecessarily mean. Like, oh, the comments no. will all be about her appearance or the way her voice sounds or the way she uses a certain word. And I'm like, it's just got nothing to do with the video, does it?
One thing, once again, like you said to me, like, I did, that is something that you see a lot doing Mango Masala. Like, because obviously we talk about sometimes contentious things on a lot of political things. And like, to be fair, not even, like, sometimes even our funny videos, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
Some of our funny, like, story time videos. And it's like, the kind of comments that we get sometimes, you're so aware that people are like, intentionally engaging in bad faith. Like, you're so miserable, you're sat yeah. at home, you've got no mates, you've probably not had a social event in like a year, you are so miserable, and you're trying to mitigate some of that misery by projecting it onto strangers on the internet.
Literally.
Very sad.
But I feel like, okay, we make politics content. I feel like that is something you can get angry about because it's quite dividing. Fine, be angry. But when it is like someone that's making videos like, oh, try this new item on the something menu with me, or like, let's try these foods out, it's got nothing to do with that, and you're being like, you're fucking ugly.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that annoys me. I'm like, just don't make it about that.
That's what I'm saying. It's just people that are miserable, like literally miserable. So you gotta beware of when you're making content.
Anyway, how have you been?
I actually wanted to like talk a little bit about this because I'm knackered, but also like I'm fine. So basically my mum is in Bangladesh. She's been in Bangladesh for like the past month. And obviously as like the eldest in the house, I am like running my household. I get help from my siblings, but like a lot of it is like me. And even like the help that I get is kind of me having to tell them like, do this, do that. So my mind is like on everything at once. And like my household is not a small household. There's like 5 to 7 people in my house, depending, because like my cousins have moved from Bangladesh, so they're like living on and off with us as well. And then on top of that, like my other like people are in and out just constantly. And on top of that, we're getting work done in our house right now, right? So there's builders every single day, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. And obviously because the weather's been like quite bad and they're working outside, like the house is like the front area of the house is like really muddy and stuff like that. So like it's a lot. And also like we don't eat takeaways, we don't eat ready meals in my house, so like I have to cook from scratch every single day, like 3-4 times a day, you know, like different meals for different people. I'm having to do like the food shop, the, you know, the Tesco shop, then the cash and carry, like the Asian food shop, the halal butcher shop, like I said, cooking multiple times a day, doing the school run, making sure the house is cleaned every night after the builders go, like keeping the fridge stocked, like just many things, many things, right? And obviously at the minute I'm tired because today I've had a lot on. Today I'm knackered because I've had to do a lot. But usually I find that I find this kind of domestic labor so easy. Like even now, even though I'm tired, the work in itself, I find just comes to me so naturally and so like readily. And it's so funny because it's like, I know my mum and my auntie when they, because the way I grew up in a very traditional like Bangladeshi household with like very traditional gender roles in the household, right? So as young girls, we were always taught like you have to, this is how you run a household and you know, you've got to clean, you've got to cook, you've got to look after the men and serve the men and all of this kind of stuff. Like I'm not exaggerating, that's literally how we were like brought up. And obviously then I grew up and I'm like super independent and I broke like so many cultural norms. You know, I'm 28, I didn't get married, I've traveled the world, I've lived outside the home and I do everything that I want all the time. And yet somehow the work that I just find the easiest and actually the most enjoyable is still domestic labor. And I'm like, I've worked so hard to be this like independent Bengali girl, and yet the spirit of my female ancestors is so strong in me.
Yeah.
You get.
But I feel like the serving the men part is not the part that's strong. Like
actually, do you know what? I'm gonna be so honest with you guys. So in my household, we're a household of women, right? It's me, my like four sisters, my mum, and then my dad. And when my mum is here, right? Like when my mum's in the country, obviously she's the one like running the household, she's the one. I cook a lot, but like my mum's the one that like looks after my dad. And I know it's crazy to even say that, but like Bengali men really do need looking after, like of that generation. Like they're not domestic labourers. They have very, very, as I said, traditional gender roles. So my mum is the one that looks after my dad. She does his cooking, she does his cleaning, everything. And she's so, like, she's very militant about her role in, like, looking after my father, right? She is so anxious, like, she'll never go somewhere or do something else at the times where he needs feeding. Like that's just top priority for her all the time, right? And me and my sisters will walk around her and be like, you're such a bird, like you're such a bird, you're so obsessed with your husband, like you're his slave, like blah 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 blah, all of these things that, like, we'd be cussing her out like all kinds of ways. And now that she's gone to Bangladesh, every single day I wake up, the first thought in my mind is, what am I going to feed my dad today? I'm being so serious.
I'm not surprised.
I can't think about anything else. I can't think about anything else until I've thought like, okay, what am I going to feed my dad? Does my dad's clothes need washing? Does my dad's bed need changing?
It just trickles into you.
Oh my God. It's crazy. It's insane.
But it's because you know you've got that responsibility now as the next oldest woman in the house, that now you know that the responsibility that she held now falls onto you because she's not here right now.
Yeah. But my point is like, I know like probably the majority of women in my situation would be complaining, like if they're doing house chores like all day, especially if they're as independent as I am and have had a life outside of the home the way that I have.
Yeah.
But genuinely, Simran, I'm not exaggerating. Like I find this kind of work like quite enjoyable.
Nah, babes, I love it. I love it too.
I'm so for real. If you ask me to write an email, I will have a meltdown. But if you ask me to cook like five course meal, yes, I'll do it happily.
I don't know what it is. It must be some like primal,
it must be
hunter-gatherer, it must instinct be
like some primordial gender role in it.
It would take me 7 hours to pluck up the courage to write an email, right? And even that, I've second-guessed it 10 billion times, sent it off, and then like been worried about it. It's taken me all day to get over that. But like even at uni, like I would enjoy so much doing like a deep clean, cleaning my room, doing the most, like doing the absolute most for a uni student, cleaning, cooking, everything. Like, and I think we've been the same the last year because we've both had the same experience of not being in full-time work and somehow not knowing what the hell, how the days have been passing so fast.
Yeah.
Because we've just been so busy.
Because that's it. You're doing all of these like small errands and small chores all day long. And like, it doesn't feel like work, does it?
But this is how like I get it. Like the stay-at-home life is for me.
And people I know, they're so surprised because it's like, we're both educated. We both have like master's degrees. We've worked for like big corporate companies.
We're such feminists.
Like, we're strong, independent, as in that we could tomorrow not need to rely on anyone. But then still, at the end of the day, I'm just a desi girl. You get get.
I just want to do my domestic labor. I think it's because it's so mindless. It's mindless work with very little consequence, but it's so fulfilling.
Yeah.
You're feeding the people that you love. You're giving them food. You're cleaning your home. Like, it's got such amazing, like, consequences in that sense. But, like, say you piss someone off at work, that could have real consequences.
And there's something, there's some kind of capitalist, like, critique in all of this, you know, like, that's
la 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 la.
Yeah, sitting in an office and doing that kind of work is not, I don't think humans were built for that. Nurturing a home, raising a family.
My ancestors are crying right now because they probably fought for the right to work, and I'm sitting here with my mic being like, I just want to cook and clean. But like, yeah, it's true.
I love it. Like, I'm honestly like, I
do love it. And I just, in this day and age, like, how do people even have time to do all of it?
This is the thing, right? Because I do think it's a case of like, so me in general, I love to cook anyway. Like, for me, like, feeding people is like my number one love language. I'm like, I cook almost like every single day, and I love to feed people. But I do think that it is a case of grass is always greener. I do think that if I was now, like, we're sat here and like, oh yeah, we'd love to be stay-at-home mums or whatever. But I do think if we had to do it, we probably wouldn't like it.
Oh yeah, no. The kids part is the hard part. But the, like, the Pilates, green juice, cooking and cleaning.
Yeah.
Husband comes home part.
Afternoon walk. Yeah. I'd love that, honestly. I would love it. Lady of leisure. Lady who leisures.
Love that. But that's what we were meant to do.
We were, I agree. That's why, like, as I was saying, like, as I'm doing, as my day right now, every single day, I'm not exaggerating, every single day I wake up, I feed my dad, I clean up, I feed my sister, I clean up, I feed the house, I clean up, and then I make like a little sweet treat, I clean up, I'll do the washing, I'll do the hoovering, like, or just whatever. And I genuinely, I'm not, like, I enjoy it.
That's how the day just flies, though. It makes so much sense now.
It does, and there's no part of me that's like, oh, this is, like, really...
Oh, yeah, I don't see myself getting tired of it.
Like, oh, I don't want to do this.
I'm chilling. No, I do get it. But then on the flip side, I have friends who are, like, the only woman in their team of, like, investment bankers at, like, really big banks. And I'm like, you are actually fucking killing it. Like, I look at them and I think, amazing.
That's another thing as well. Because then I think, like, for example, I've thought about, like, okay, cool. What if I were to get, like, a husband and he is, like, the provider, right? Like, I stay at home and he works and he makes the money. I also don't think I would be able to do that.
No.
Because I'm not going to lie, like, I'm slightly competitive and I just think, like, whatever he could do, I could do as well. Like, if he goes and he makes, like, X amount of money, in my head, I'll just always think, like, I could make more.
I don't care who makes more, but I would need to make my own and a substantial amount of it, at least to compete enough that, like, it's yes. not like a massive divide, because then I would just think that
power dynamic,
that exactly, because yes, cooking and cleaning and looking after children if you have children is a really difficult job, but it doesn't, no one considers it in the same matchup as actually going to a 9-to-5.
They don't, which is another thing as well, because I feel like domestic labor often gets, like, overlooked as, like, really, really difficult labor. Like, I think a lot of people think stay-at-home mothers are, like, pretty kind of, like, useless, and that they don't have, like, much utility, and they're just at home to look good and just whatever. And actually, like, as I said, I'm like running the household, but I have a lot of help from my sisters. Like, they're also helping with the chores and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think, like, my mum does all of our work, like, combined,
yeah,
by herself, and I'm like, wow. I said it to my sister today because I was like, wow, your mum must just work all day long. How the hell does she do it?
And they, like, bear the brunt of so much upkeep, maintenance, these invisible tasks
every single day.
Like, when we grew up, we wouldn't even notice about the kitchen roll getting refilled, or the toothpaste getting refilled, or the hand soap getting refilled. Like,
exactly.
Such little things that we just expect. Like, oh, there's always soap in the hand soap dispenser. There's always toilet roll. Like,
it's thankless. It's thankless work.
And once you get your own place and you realize that, like, the toilet roll doesn't magically just reappear, is when you start realizing your brain has to start working in that way. So it's not easy work, even though it's very much diminished very quickly and written off as easy work. But then again, like we said, I do need my own money.
She's got to find that balance. I think that's the difficult thing with being a woman. It's like finding that balance between like domestic and like corporate labor.
What the balance is a really well-paying part-time job.
Oh, I would. That's ideal for me. I would love that. I would love to have
like
that.
A little Monday to Wednesday number.
Yes, that would be ideal. Oh my God.
God, I literally pray to God that the UK moves towards this four-day work week thing.
Do you think they will? I really don't think they will.
No, but a lot of companies have signed up for it.
Really?
Like a lot of companies do it.
Have they implemented it in France? I saw a headline like ages ago that they were going to implement it in France.
Yeah, I think so. But again, it's like voluntary. So like if you worked for a corporation that had offices all over the world, they probably would never do it because obviously not all of their offices would be compliant.
Because I know like a lot of people, I know like they did trials in like a few countries and they'd found that it actually increases productivity. Because truthfully, we don't need to be at work 5 days a week. We actually don't. Like, especially if you're in like the corporate world or like you're doing office work, like the amount of work that you have to do, genuinely you don't actually need 5 days to do it. Like you just end up slacking because they give you more time than you need.
This is what annoyed me because I see so many people on like TikTok, even like my friends and stuff, like it's so unnatural to be sat under fluorescent lighting at a desk staring at a screen for 8-9 hours of the day when all of it is just busy work. Like you're just literally making yourself look busy. You could genuinely do the work in less than 2 hours, I reckon, for most of these desk jobs, but you're getting paid for 40, so you sit there for 40.
Exactly. It's inefficient. Like it is actually inefficient.
So inefficient.
But people always say like the UK, oh God, I don't know much about like economics on that level, but like people do say that like on a global level or like in comparison with like Western powers, that the UK has like very low like productive output.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised either. It's a work culture.
I think unless you're at like a very high like corporation, a very high level working those like stupid like 80 hour work weeks.
Which is also not a solution.
Then yeah, fair enough. You're probably very productive.
Yeah.
Which is also not healthy, not a solution. But yeah, I'm sure you're really productive and you get loads done. But for the most, like for the average person working in an office, you're just wiggling a mouse, trying to make yourself look busy till it hits 5 o'clock and then you're out of there. Which would drive me crazy. I mean, it did drive me crazy. That's another, my flipping. I was speaking to my cousin the other day and he was like, oh, so like, has your prefrontal cortex come in yet? Because I kept saying like, oh, it's not come. And I was like, yeah. And what I realized is my prefrontal cortex hates capitalism and hates the system, which obviously we knew, but like she really hates it. I think that my main thing is that like, I'll just be sat watching TV, like doing something completely random. And then the most like hard hitting, earth shattering thought just comes to me and I'm like, oh my God, my whole perspective on life just changed.
What do you mean?
Like, the other day I was just sat there and I was like, we live on a planet, on a floating rock with like landscapes, all these different like types of environments, like all the wildlife, nature, sunrises, waterfalls, like all of this stuff exists and we made shareholder value.
Yeah,
like the whole range of what we could have created exists and we decided high-rise building, computer, Excel spreadsheet.
I've been saying this.
We're all supposed to be like loving each other and everyone just hates each other.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how have we got here? How have we actually got here?
I wonder if historians will study it or if they'll be even deeper in it.
I feel like this like capitalist lifestyle that we live is, or the world that we live in, is very dystopian. I feel like this is it. Like we're here in the dystopia. Like it's not normal. I hear you though. I actually get what you mean. I fully understand. I've always felt like that. That's why like I hate working. It's not just because I'm lazy. It's Marxist praxis.
Amen. Also, I was gonna try and link this, but I feel like I can't link it now. But you had something to say on migration.
Speaking of my mum being away. Yeah, I did have something to say actually. So basically my situation right now is that, so my mum's side of the family, so growing up obviously I go to Bangladesh quite a lot. My mum's almost entire side of the family are in Bangladesh. So like I kind of grew up going back and forth, like it almost like on average, like it's like every other year I'd go to Bangladesh. And it's amazing. I love it because like part of the reason why, and everyone who knows me knows like how kind of like patriotic I am of like my country and stuff like that, and part of the reason why I love it so much and part of the reason why I go so much is because like my family are there and I'm very, very close with my family and I love my family so much. However, my mother's two younger brothers now are have moved to the UK and have moved their families over here as well. And it's just kind of like, it's a lot of change for my family right now. So basically we're from an area in the Sylhet region called Hobbegunj, and it's basically like my mum's sister and her two younger brothers live in that area, like live in the same house with my grandma, and then my mum's other sister lives in like Sylhet City. And basically the families who are in Hobbegunj, so it's like three households, all three of them have now moved out, two of them to the UK, one to Sylhet. So our like childhood home in Bangladesh, like my grandma's house where we stay for 2 months every other year, where I have so many memories, basically they're locking that up because my grandma now is moving to Sylhet because no one's left in Hobbegunj. So she's moving to Sylhet now, and I am distraught about it. I'm just thinking like how this is like a side of migration that like people don't really talk about. When, for example, in Britain, because like the families are migrating to Britain, so for example if you talk to like the average British person, they're gonna have a certain idea of what this migration is, right? And for them it's like, oh my god, they're coming over here, they're taking our jobs, they're using our resources, and they're being parasitic and leeches and stuff like that. And it's actually like, obviously in the most extreme cases people are literally risking their lives, right? But kind of I think more for the average immigrant, you know, who aren't necessarily risking their life, they're coming here legally, it's still an extremely, extremely heart-wrenching process. Because my whole life my family have been immigrating like to the UK, like random family members, but it's always like adults. This is the first time where someone like really close to me who is like children or like teenagers are moving to the UK. And it's like, it's so hard because they're leaving everything they know, you know, they're leaving their entire livelihoods, their friendships, their like just everything, their daily routines, like, you know, the shop that they always go to, the food that they always eat, the route from school, just these small kind of like mundane details that make your life your life. You're having to abandon all of that, and it's like permanently, you know. And it's so, so, so heart-wrenching, and people don't realize like the sacrifices that immigrants actually make to come here. And it's so sad. And like for me, on the other end of it, where it's like my family are like the kind of crux to my connection to Bangladesh, right, I'm really like struggling with the change, because it's like when I go back now, nothing is going to be the same. Like half my family in Bangladesh have gone, they've moved, you know, I'm not going to be in like my childhood home anymore. It's not going to be bustling and loud and busy like I'm going to be in a different city every time I go now, and it's not the same.
It is so sad. It's undeniably sad.
It's so sad. It's so sad. Because it's like you have so many memories attached to that, you know? Like I'm not exaggerating. I think I've been to Bangladesh maybe like 14, 15 times. I'm 28 years old, so that's like every other year. And every time we go for like 2 months, you know? My entire childhood, like I grew up in that house, you know? And it's so sad, like, and I feel so bad for my grandma as well, because she's old, and like that's where she's lived, you know, a lot of her like adult life. And it's like people, once again, they don't realize that there's this side of migration that isn't these people coming over here to be parasitic, and actually it comes at a great personal cost.
No, 100%. I feel like it is so sad, but at least the positive thing is that when they come here, they've got you guys, so at least it's they can speak the language, they've got a base to work out of, like it's safe, they know that there's already a community developed here that they, and they're obviously related to you guys, so it's even safer, like they've got that base at least.
Yeah, it's true. Of course it could be worse. Like one of my mum's cousins, so another one of my uncle and his family, have moved to the UK. Initially they were going to be settled in Manchester, and because of like job situations they ended up in Peterborough, and there's not that many Bengalis there, there's no family there, so you know, for them it's like quite difficult. And obviously like I said, even, you know, in extreme cases people have to really risk their life to get here. So I know in the grand scheme of things, obviously alhamdulillah, like it's okay there, it could be a lot worse. It's just these huge life changes that are really, really sad.
I know, but it's true. But it's like, even though they're okay, they have people here and stuff like that, it's still so, so, so sad. And like you think about like people in your family And obviously I relate, like people in my family that came over, the ones who were the first people to came over, and there was no community here.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It was a very, very, very different time, tensions like racially and everything like that as well. They didn't speak a lick of the language. They didn't have the internet. They couldn't learn that kind of stuff. It was manual labor jobs. And I just think like, I'm 25. My grandma was 15 when she came here. She got married at 16, pregnant at 16, first baby at 17, second baby at 19.
And that's it. Like, they were kids building this whole new life.
What in the world? She didn't speak a word of English. She was a child. She was not taken, but she left her mum and dad and everything she knew to come to a random country and to frankly get married to a man she did not know.
Exactly. I was just about to say, respectfully, to a stranger. Your granddad at that point was a stranger to her
at the time.
Like, they didn't have courting, they didn't have dating, they weren't knowing each other for a year or two before.
And like, bless her heart, like, she laughs about it obviously when we talk about it, and what she doesn't realize is like, girl,
it's actually so hard.
Are you okay?
I know.
It is so sad. And then she talks about like, you know, she got to come back to Punjab once before her parents passed away.
That's another thing. Oh my God.
So she left in her teens, came back once to visit because they just saved up the money for her to afford the plane ticket. She saw them, went back, and then a few years later they passed away.
They're gone. I know.
And she never knew that she wasn't going to get to see them again.
That's another thing as well, like, you don't just move it, you don't just leave it behind, but you also really like significantly sever your access to your homeland and your family back home, you know. Alhamdulillah, like I'm saying, you know, as growing up we were very lucky to be able to like go every other year, but I'm not like, I'm aware of how like rare that is. Tickets to Bangladesh is not cheap, and back in the day, like, it was only like one or two airlines that were doing flights back home, you know, so they would monopolize the trade, they'd hike the prices up, like, it's not cheap. I know how lucky I was that we were, you know, financially comfortable enough to be able to afford to go back so often. But there are so many Bangladeshi kids and families who, once they've come, they've never gone back, because simply for the fact that they can't afford it, you know.
It's terrifying to think of it like that. And I think like a lot of the like smaller cultures, like in the South Asian subcontinent, like they do have a very similar experience, like as Bangladeshis, as maybe Gujaratis, like as Punjabis for sure. Like, locking up the houses back home is incredibly sad, and you don't know when you're gonna like see that again.
Bro, just visual, the optics of that, like, we're locking up my childhood home in Bangladesh, how devastating is that?
Because I know a lot of, I don't know about Bangladesh, but I know a lot of houses in Punjab are like that.
Nah man, I told you, that's why it's so hard for me, because my dad's side of the family have always been here, right? But is my mum's side of the family, like I said, almost entirely were in Bangladesh. And like, for me, this is, my dad's side of the family have been like slowly migrating here since I was a kid, you know. So I didn't really kind of build much association with them in Bangladesh. But whereas with my mum, they are like, as I said, the crux of my kind of connection to Bangladesh. And to have that house, like, I don't even think about it because it makes me want to cry.
Yeah, no, but I get you, because I feel like that's why I say like the kind of smaller cultures like ours kind of have that experience. Whereas if you're from like mainstream like India, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen for them too, of course it does, but I feel like my friends who are like Indian, they have a massive livelihood back home still, that people don't have to immigrate here. They have such a great life there. Their houses are beautiful, their jobs are great and stuff. It all, they don't need to lock up the houses. In fact, they don't want to move here because everything's cool in India, like that they live in amazing beautiful houses and stuff like that. And you would never think of like locking up, and you can easily like go and get a job there or work there, or people go there voluntarily to work, like back to their family. And that's something that we don't really get.
It's a lot of regional differences as well, isn't it? Mm. But yeah, I was just thinking, I've just honestly the past few months, like since I heard that they're coming over, because it was a very quick process, like with their visa getting accepted and stuff, I've just been honestly so sad about it. And like, I was gonna go, I really wanted to go like before they moved, to give myself like a last time to like be there with everyone. But tickets were like £1,500, and I was like, I can't justify that.
It's so expensive
to go for like a week or 2 weeks.
I know, it is crazy how much they really do exploit the like lack of availability of tickets.
My flights, yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Because we're trying to get my grandma flights to Punjab right now, and it's just looking like just ridiculously expensive for her to go.
How much do they cost usually?
About £1,500. That's the one that we're seeing.
Is that normal?
I didn't think it was. I think you can get better deals. Like, you definitely can get better deals, don't get me wrong, because she has gone for cheaper.
I was going to say, I always thought, like, it would be, like, 700, around 700, like, to that part of the world.
But they don't fly to Amritsar in Punjab. They fly to Amritsar via Delhi.
Yeah.
And that's where the price gets, like, hiked up. And it's, like, a 10-hour drive from Delhi. I'm like, you're not getting in the car for 10 hours in India. Like, you're just not doing that.
You're not doing that as an elderly.
She's like,
yeah,
I'll get
yeah,
the
yeah.
bus. I'm like, absolutely not. Woman.
Oh, bless her. Oh, well, I'm sure keep looking, like, you'll find something.
Oh, yeah, she's got the whole family on it.
Oh, bless her. But, yeah, it's sad, man. It's sad. Like, and even when you go back, like, nothing's the same. You know what I mean? Like, things are just always different. And someone I know as well, like, there's this Indian Bengali influencer who... she went back home recently. I think her family's from like Kolkata, and she was talking about how, you know, every time, like the kind of the experience of every time going back home and seeing fewer and fewer familiar faces, because like your elders, this is really sad, are like passing away basically. You know, that is another thing that's like flipping devastating. Like, it's just bare sad. Like, and people think that like we're dying to come here, and we're like, you know, we're coming here to leech off the system, and there's no personal sacrifice, and we'd love to be here. And it's like, God, you don't know half the story.
But I think that comes from the fact that a lot of people think that there's just no livelihood in these places where people are coming from. Like,
that's it.
That it's, there's no pleasure, there's no joy.
That's it. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's it. Oh my God. So true.
They
so
think
true.
That we're just sat here desperate, dreaming
of
England.
There's nothing to live for over there.
Precisely.
In our mud huts and our dirt roads, like, with nothing to do.
Yeah. No, but genuinely, that's what I think it is. And they just don't think for a second that there's like a whole culture and life there they don't understand.
Exactly. But yes, that's just kind of been my little contemplation over the past few months that I've been thinking about and feeling sad about.
Well, you got it out.
I did. Thanks for listening, guys.
I'm glad.
Talking about returning home though, like, this is a bit of good news today. Obviously we've been kind of talking about the situation in Palestine over the past like almost year and a half now, and every single week it's like really, really bad news. And this week, I think it's actually quite nice. The footage that we have been seeing coming out of Gaza and Palestine and the West Bank has been very different to the footage that we've been seeing since October 2023. And it is of people returning to, like, refugees returning to Gaza and, you know, being reunited with their families and things like that. Because obviously, since the ceasefire has been called, obviously, we spoke last week about, you know, the fact that Israel have still breached it, but on the whole, Gazans and Palestinians have been allowed to kind of like return to their homes and reunite with their families. And the footage that we've seen coming out of that has been really, really heartwarming in some ways. Like, I'm a very like emotional person, and I have like a very low like emotional threshold. Like, things make me super, I get very sentimental very quickly, and in some ways, like, it has been harder for me to see that imagery because it's like so, it's just, I have no other word for it. It's just so emotional, you know? No, that has been like a massive relief, you know, and a weight off our shoulders to kind of finally be able to see this kind of, you know, reporting coming from the ground in Gaza.
Such a relief. And like 2 weeks ago when it got announced, me and Carlos had an episode and we were talking about, like, of course, like, the fight is far from over, to be honest, and
yeah,
what they are returning
to
is absolutely desecrated land, and I can't even fathom going back to your neighborhood and not recognizing any of it. Like, that's always just the underlying tone here. But I suppose, like, it is very heartwarming that they are allowed to return.
You know what it is? It's like, because circumstances have been so dire, you can see how much it means to be,
they just
able, to be
relieved.
Able to go back. And that's it. And at the end of the day, like, I think it really just drives home the fact that really what this conflict is a conflict for home and a conflict for, you know, like, being where you belong. You know, they're not the Gazans and the Palestinians, they're not fighting for excess. They're not fighting for excess, you know, money or power or control or influence. They are simply fighting for what is the most basic human right and the most basic necessity to humans, which is their home, their family, their livelihoods, and that's it. You know, so to even in all the destruction and the desecration, even to be able to go back to a half-bombed home, you're seeing how much means to them, and it just goes to show what it is that they've been fighting for, you know. But yeah, that's been some like positive news coming out of Gaza.
Very nice. I think that's a nice way to round the episode off. Great. Well, thanks guys for listening. Next week we will have Carlos back, who is getting a tan in Miami right now.
Oh, I'm so upset. I wish I was where he was.
I'm very upset. He sent me a picture of the sun today and I was very...
fuming. Absolutely fuming.
No, I'm going to kill him. Anyway, we'll be back with Carlos next week. But bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
See you soon.